If you're like me, you probably own a lot of cookbooks, but what books that are simply about food should your home library include? We've invited Judith Jones back to our show to share some of her suggestions because in the course of her long career at Knopf, she has edited books that would become must-haves for home chefs. Those she's worked with include Julia Child, whose very first book she published, after which she became her sole editor, Lydia Bastianich, James Beard, Marion Cunningham, Marcella Hazan, Mada Jaffrey, Jacques Pepin, Claudia Roden. The list is too long to mention everyone. Judith Jones has been my guest a number of times over the years for her own books, too, both The Pleasures for Cooking for One and The Tenth Muse, My Life in Food from Knopf, and I'm very pleased that she could join us again. Hello.
Hello.
Was it a difficult process for you to decide which books to include?
No, because one thing that I think helped me was I was a general editor. I was a literary editor. I worked with John Updike for 50 years.
And Tyler, and John Tyler, Hersey, yeah. Elizabeth Bowen. The list is incredible.
And I didn't see a separation. I wasn't a cookbook editor. And I think that's a mistake because then you begin reaching for books that you don't really need, a zucchini cookbook. You know what I mean.
So you were looking for literary qualities in the books about food that you were editing?
Literary qualities, but also being able to translate to words the process of cooking, the techniques. There isn't any art form that doesn't require learning basic techniques. You couldn't be a dancer if you didn't learn to pirouette, you know. And I felt the same way about cookbooks. They were inadequate, and they were badly written, truncated. The slogan was fast and easy.
And voice is really important
to
me when I'm
important.
Reading a cookbook.
It is.
So
you have to feel that person has done this recipe and wants you, she's going to enable you to do it.
Given all of the people you've worked with, were you worried about singling out some as opposed to others when you were coming up with your list?
You mean the ones that I didn't?
Yes.
Mostly I looked for people. After Julia Child was such a success, it occurred to me slowly that, my goodness, when we're doing things like Middle Eastern food and Indian food and Chinese food, we're flying blind. We're sometimes making dishes we haven't tasted.
Most of them, if we have, we've tasted in restaurants and assumed that that's the only place we would ever eat
exactly.
them.
Exactly. And restaurant cooking is very different from home cooking.
So let's talk about Julia Child for a moment. Did you like her style immediately?
Yes. I can remember I took that, it was a huge tome, and I took it home and read every night with it and made some recipes. And I realized this is what I'd been looking for.
And when you met her, was she the same in person as she was on the page?
Oh, very much, yeah. And one of the lovely things she had was this earthiness. I mean, when somebody said, "Why do you massage the chicken?" she said, "Well, I think the chicken likes it." I mean, she made you laugh. She made you enjoy. You were smacking your lips. And I think too many Americans had grown up with a sort of Puritan attitude that food is to fill you up. It should taste nice, pure products. But to enjoy cooking, that's...
Well, I remember I've talked to Julia many times, and she was a person of strong opinions.
Yes.
Did that make her difficult to edit?
No. She would tease me. She once said to me, "Judith, you'll never be a good cook if you count the number of pots you're using." Well, I didn't follow her advice, but you know that strong opinion was part of her whole character.
And you've suggested her classic Mastering the Art of French Cooking, which she wrote with Simone Beck and Louisette Bertold. In looking it over now, does it still hold up?
Absolutely. I don't think anybody has come close to writing a book that teaches you by doing and tasting and doing it the right way. She was once asked, we were at a panel discussion in St. Johnsbury, Vermont, and just Julia and I, it was a conversation, and people came from all over Vermont. They had to move from first the library to the church and then to the auditorium of the high school. And they just loved her. And I can remember her sitting there sort of swinging her leg when somebody asked her, what is it that makes French cooking so great? And she said, well, it's soigner. And then she described taking beautiful green beans and just topping and tailing them, having the water, a pot of water all boiling. If you're worried about the vitamins, take them in a pill. And she described the whole process of just boiled beans bathed in butter. And then she just said, that's soigner.
You give us a book translated by M.F.K. Fisher, The Physiology of Taste by Briat Savarin. Why do you say it's one of the best books on food ever written?
Because he goes into areas of food that you don't expect. I mean, both the quality of the ingredients, and it's just a rich mind, and you love being with it. And he and M.F.K. Fisher, who translated the later edition, it's almost like a little love affair between them. They tease each other.
Well, M.F.K. Fisher is pretty famous for her own writing, but you didn't include any of those books.
Didn't I have the anthology, The Art of Eating?
I don't know. I don't remember seeing that. But
it was a mistake. I was typing
myself. Because she's pretty – also, what people love to read her, even if they don't care about food, because
yes,
she's such a wonderful stylist. How did James Beard compare as a writer with Julia? They were friends.
Yeah. Jim was born at the wrong time because – he was ready to take on this revolution, and he knew how good mastering the art of French cooking was. He said to me, I didn't even know him very well. I just called him. I said, you've got to read this manuscript. And then he finally said, I wish I'd written it. But he wasn't so much a writer. He was a doer.
And we wind up with the people today knowing him mostly because of the James Beard Awards. But the book of his that you're a big fan of is Theory and Practice of Good Cooking. Do the theory and practice always go hand in hand?
Yes, I think so. Yeah, for somebody like Beard. Too many, one of the troubles with Americans is that I don't understand why, women particularly, they're so afraid of failure. I mean, part of cooking is experimenting and adjusting and substituting, and if it's not good, take a note, and next time leave, don't put in so much hot pepper.
You also have included Claudia Roden and Mada Jaffrey in your home library list, a book of Middle Eastern cooking from Claudia and an invitation to Indian cooking from Mada. But they're more than just cookbooks. They almost function as memoirs.
Yes, they do. They do, but... The Irene Kuo, which is now out of print, it's sickening.
The Key to Chinese Cooking.
Yeah, you know, the rights reverted, and why it isn't in at least an e-book, I don't know, because to me it is the best basic cookbook. And again, it's language. She has such a wonderful way of describing what stir-frying is all about. And the words she uses, slithering and... they don't just pop into my mind, but you suddenly are doing it the right way because those words have guided you.
Well, most people just assume that they could never cook Chinese food. That's why you go to a restaurant. But she convinced Americans that they could make Chinese food themselves. Or they should try anyway.
They can try.
And then Edna Lewis, incredible person, the granddaughter of freed slaves.
Yeah.
She was considered the grand dame of Southern cooking. Again, a matter of voice?
Absolutely. And it's so interesting how that book evolved because she really came and talked. She had a collaborator, and the collaborator was very generous and just withdrew because I said, we've lost the voice. She had come to my office about another book they were doing, and I got her to start talking, and I was just entranced. And she would go home and write it on a long yellow legal pad, and we'd put in a few commas and periods, and but not much. It was just as she remembered it.
And Craig Claiborne wrote in the Times that her book, the one that you are recommending, may well be the most entertaining regional cookbook in America.
Yes. Isn't that wonderful?
Because her voice was just so much her own.
The things that I felt that these writers had in common is that cooking these dishes was connecting again with the past, and the past was full of warm, happy memories. You know, even if you lived in a simple place or had to leave a great palace in India or in Cairo, as Claudia Roden did. And these books are infused with that feeling of reliving that part of their lives. And I think that that's a very strong factor.
They used to joke that English cooking was an oxymoron, English cuisine anyway. But you include Jane Grigson.
Well, she was an awfully good writer, Jane Grigson, yeah.
And then you have Jason Epstein, who, like you, was an editor of some pretty important writers, Norman Mailer, Vladimir Nabokov, that's pretty heavyweight. You include his memoir, Eating.
Yes, I do, because he's the first of all these writers that said, you don't need a recipe. Recipes are your conversations. And so he's standing at the stove as he's giving you his recipe. The ingredients are not lined up and extracted. And he also says, you never do a recipe twice the same way, which is true. And
unless you're a restaurant chef and you have to do it the same way every night.
That takes part of the fun out of it. But I had a little eggplant last night. I thought it was a little soft, and I asked if, and they said, oh, no, it's just fine, right? Well, it was brown inside. And I went around the brown part and used sort of the rim and the skin instead of throwing it out. Of course, a restaurant would have to throw it out. And it was damn good.
You also included Ray Sokolov's Steal the Menu. He was the food editor at the New York Times.
Yeah.
What did he give us that we didn't get from the other books?
He became a professional food critic, and he was the food editor of the Times for a while. And he brought, for instance, he found people who could teach him about Sichuan food. And so he was both the reporter and traveler and taster. And he's got a very interesting mind, and he puts it all together. Sometimes it's you could argue with it, but I think he helps again for you to see things more deeply. And
well, if I were putting together a list, I know you were too modest to do this, I would recommend your book about your life in food, The Tenth Muse.
Oh, well, good.
Meanwhile, we are posting the authors you've suggested on our show page.
Oh, how wonderful.
WNYC.org. Because except for one or two that is out of print, most of them are still available.
I think they are. But post them anyway, and then we can put them on ebooks.
Well, maybe we should start demanding that.
Yeah, that's right.
That Alice's book be out there again.
Absolutely, yeah. Ray Sokolov did a wonderful book, too, called The Saucier's Apprentice.
We have a link to suggestions from our listeners about essential cookbooks on our show page at WNYC as well. My great thanks to Judith Jones, who's going back to Knopf to do a cookbook, or are you going to do some
I'm playing with a little cookbook.
Thank you so much for being with us again.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.